The Solid Foundations Property Podcast is brought to you in association with Gap Property Investments, helping you getting a better return on your money in 2026 through property. Check out gappropertyinvestments.com. And also CitiesDays, Ireland's leading provider of customized accommodation solutions, specifically designed for contractor teams working on projects. Check out CitiesDays.ie. Each and every month, we bring you all the very best in property knowledge from right across Ireland, Northern Ireland, the UK. We touch in with very special guests. And, of course, we're delighted to say we have another very special guest today, but we will touch on that very shortly indeed. As usual, I am joined by Lisa O'Reilly. Lisa, how are you? And, first of all, how's your couple of weeks been since we last spoke? Good?
I've had a good couple of weeks. The last guests that we had on were really, really interesting, weren't they? So we spoke about the short-term letting rules that are coming out in May this year. Then last week, we had a pretty inspirational lady on our podcast. And she talked about how she got started about 10 years ago, maybe? And now she's grown her portfolio to over 50 or 60 properties, I think it was. So she was really inspiring. So we're having some great conversations this year, Bart.
But just looking at today's guest, okay, he's got a big following to follow up to, but this man definitely can. Our special guest today, of course, is one of Dublin's most recognisable names in the property world, Ray Cook, who is founder of Ray Cook Auctioneers. And as we said, has various estate agency business across Dublin. Over 2 decades, and we're going to delve deep into this 2 decades of experience. He's built a huge reputation, straight talking, which we like to hear, Lisa, delivering results in a very competitive market. And something we're going to talk about as well is navigating that Celtic Tiger years and getting his thoughts on today's market as well. So we're really looking forward to that. And delighted to say, Ray Cook, you're very welcome. How are you today?
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to this. And a belated happy birthday, Lisa, as well. So
that's okay, Ray. That's okay. You good? Porrick really should have been the one to say it. We've been doing this podcast for a couple of years now, but look, we're okay.
Oh, it was bad form, Lisa. You're dead right.
Sorry about that. Lisa, we'll have to sort that out. Happy birthday to you. You know, so good to have Ray on the program, Lisa.
Yeah, thanks very much. Thanks. Just forget about it now. Forget about it. Ray, it's great to have you on. And so, as Porrick said, you're one of the most well-known names for letting and estate agencies in Dublin. We deal with you ourselves at CitiesDays. So can you just kind of give us a brief background as to what Ray Cook does and how did you get started, I suppose?
The Solid Foundations Property Podcast is brought to you in association with Gap Property Investments, helping you getting a better return on your money in 2026 through property. Check out gappropertyinvestments.com. And also CitiesDays, Ireland's leading provider of customized accommodation solutions, specifically designed for contractor teams working on projects. Check out CitiesDays.ie.
Yeah, we celebrated 20 years in business last November. We set up in 2005. It was a great time in November 2005. We got a year out of it, and then the Celtic Tiger crash imploded or exploded, whatever way you want to look at it. And I suppose we've grown in that 20 years to, we're the third biggest sales agent in Dublin and maybe in Ireland. I think, according to what Daft keep telling us, that we're the biggest letting agent in Dublin, or sorry, in Ireland as well. We have a huge property management portfolio. We have a maintenance division, we have a bank valuations division, we have a commercial division, sales and lettings. We have a company there, which is a buyer's agent, obviously completely independent, and a relocation agent as well. And we have a financial services business as well, which is obviously mortgages and life and pensions as well. So we're busy. Balls to be balancing and throwing up and everything like that, yeah.
It obviously didn't start,
but it's
that
all exciting, right?
So how did you get started from the beginning? So you left school, did you go straight into setting up your own business, or did you learn the tricks of the trade?
No, like I said, I'm from Racoole, County Dublin there, where the Putchane Still is. And when I was growing up, I was working in the Putchane Still, doing deliveries, first of all, and doing the bottles, first of all, the deliveries. And then I was a barman. And I liked that. Like I said, I loved money, you know. And I knew I wanted to go into business myself. And I think when I was that age, I thought I was going to open a chain of hotels or a chain of pubs and restaurants. And I went into hotel management with a crowd called the Great Southern Group. They would have had hotels all around Ireland. You know, the Great Southern Killarney would have been one of them, just at the train station. And where I was down in a place called Park na Silla, down in Sneem, just outside of Kenmare. And I went into that for a couple of years. I was only 17 doing my leaving cert. I was a young lad doing my leaving cert. Then I was living down in Kerry, as you can imagine. So I had to kind of grow up very quickly. And then because I was a trainee manager, I was kind of over a lot of responsibility, and you're kind of over people and bits and pieces and everything like that. So, but I soon realized doing 80-hour weeks and earning absolutely nothing, it wasn't for me. And I always knew the local estate agent in Racoole. I have actually two uncles as well out in Wicklow who were estate agents as well. And they had big houses and nice cars and whatever. So I soon realized there that I wanted to get into a estate agency. So, but back then would have been obviously early noughties, and no one was hiring 19 or 20 year olds to go in and sell houses. So I decided to go off and go to Australia for a year, and then I came back and I was just turned 22, and then I got my first job with a company. And within 2.5 years I had opened my own business then, my first office in Glendalkin. That's how I got into it.
Was it all planned, would you say, right? Or did you kind of, like, do you kind of fall into these things? Like, you kind of got a bit of an idea, a bit of an inkling, and then, like, and then you end up falling into it? Or was it all kind of very much kind of planned? Like, you wanted to be the hotel or the pub owner?
Yeah, so you went down that route first? I had a very good head on my shoulders when I was younger. Probably not so much now, but like I said, when I was younger, I was very focused on what I wanted to do. I was very focused on where I wanted to go. I was very focused since I was a young lad. I've done other kind of podcasts, and you've probably seen snippets there where I was asked when I was 10 what I wanted to be, and I said a millionaire, you know, because I always knew I wanted to go into business and be successful. And there was no one in my family that did that, but that's what I wanted. And I didn't care if I opened up a chain of McDonald's or laundromats. It wouldn't have bothered me, like, you know, so just as long as I was in business. But did I fall into a estate agent? Look, I wasn't great in school. As it turns out, I'm dyslexic. Didn't know that until probably 10 years ago or 5-10 years ago. But I'm dyslexic. So I was never good at school. I was good at stuff I was interested in. So technical drawing, business studies, history, English, but drama, you know, I couldn't remember the poems. I'd get them all jumbled up, like, you know. So, but at the time, didn't know it was dyslexia. You're kind of thinking, Jesus, what's wrong with me? So I was all right in school. I was average, you know. I would have been in the medium somewhere. But if it was history, I was doing honors history, business studies, honors, you know, technical drawing, you know. But if it came to languages or anything like that, it wasn't great. So I kind of knew I had to go into something where it would have to be my personality or something there that I could work hard at, that I could grow or build my way up. And that's the way I went into it. And then when the hotel thing, I wouldn't say didn't work out. I just said, Jesus, I don't want to be working Christmas. I don't want to be working Easter's every summer when everyone else is off. So I soon copped on to that. It was great crack and it was brilliant. But I kind of said, like, do I want to be doing this when I'm 25 or 35 or 45? And I soon realized, I said, well, look, I looked into obviously a estate agency. And back then, you could be a painter and decorator, or you could be an assistant, or you could be a trainee hotel manager. And then the following day, you could be an estate agent. There was no licensing or whatever. So it was a lot easier to kind of get into it than it is now with qualifications. And I said, look, I'm going to get into that. And I went off, and when I came back from Australia, I applied to every probably estate agent in Dublin. I got, I'd say, 6 or 7 job offers, and I went with the one where I could start selling houses straight away. And I hit the ground running. My attitude was always be a team player. It's always better to get, you know, your company sign up, because that means the phone will ring in more. And That was the way it always was. And unfortunately, my boss who gave me the go, I think it was around 6 weeks after he turned 40, dropped dead of a massive heart attack. And his wife took over. And, you know, I probably didn't see eye to eye with her. And she kept moving the offices because, in fairness, I would have been one of the best. And then she moved me to the office because that office wasn't doing well. And then that office would start doing well, but the office I left then started going downhill. And then back then there was no computers. You were working off paper files. You were working off, I didn't have a computer at my desk. You know, you didn't have iPhones. You know what I mean? Like you're working off pen and paper, really. So like I said, I was in Clondalkin and then she moved me to Tala. And you might as well have been going from, you know, Waterford to Dublin. You know, it was that much of a difference, like, because no one knew me in Tala, you know. And I didn't mind that. But the fact is I had to start from zero again, and she wasn't paying me any extra money. And then she went to move me again. I said, look, no hassle, but you're going to have to obviously pay me. You know, you're going to have to give me a pay rise here. And she gave me €1,000 of a pay rise and wouldn't give me any commission more. So that kind of said, right, that gave me a good kick up my, you know what, to say, let's go out and do this on my own. So, and I set up my company. I looked for offices. It came down to an office in Lucan and an office in Clondalkin. And it just so happened that office in Clondalkin was the width of the road between the current employer and my new office. And I went with the one in Clondalkin. And yeah, it has taken off since then.
It sounds like, Ray, you're the salesman, and that's probably what got you to, you know, give that confidence to keep going. Like, you probably got enough nose to, you know, keep going. And that salesman kind of mentality really helps when you're starting up a business. But now you're after scaling it to a different, like, scale, a whole new level. So what got you there? Hasn't got you here, sort of thing. So what kind of other skills have you had to learn since then in order to scale up? Well, what is your, like, what happened that you've gone from there to now?
I would outwork everyone. Simple as that. So if the three of us went into McDonald's and we all started in the same role, I'd be at the top before the two of you. And that's nothing against the two of you, but I'll outwork everyone. Like I said, I am... Right now, I'm thinking about my business 10, 20 years' time. I'm not looking at 6 months' time. I'm looking at 10, 20 years' time. So, and I'm already putting processes in place now to grow to where we want to grow, you know. And what you have to do is, and that's my mentality, and that, in fairness, it's my parents. They instilled that in me that, you know, you can do anything you want, but how you do it is you outwork everyone. You work hard and you outwork everyone. And that's something I knew that I'd go in, that people would wait for the phone to ring, whereas then I'd make the phone ring. You know, I'd go out and do leaflet drops. I'd door knock. I would phone people. I'd cold call people. I would do everything at any to get that.
And those simple basics there that you've outlined, Ray, about knocking on doors, ringing people, hustling. All right, you didn't have digital media. Digital media is important, but the personal touch when it comes to estate agency is probably more important when it comes to it.
Yeah, like my business is built around repeat business. And again, when you're an estate agent, and just say if you're selling houses, right, and I go out and sell Porrick's house today, and he's a first-time buyer, my attitude is he's going to probably live in that house for an average of around 5 years. So you have to have, I always had a long-term view that if I go in and I look after Porrick and I give him unbelievable, now he might turn around and say, geez, that bastard, I'm after paying 10 grand more than I should have on that property. But I guarantee you, when you go to sell your house, you're thinking, well, if I'm selling my house, I want Ray to sell my house, because they were brilliant when they sold their house. So that was always a thing there, that you might turn around and say, the bastard, but you'd say, well, I want him selling it, you know, if I'm going to be on the other side. And that's what happened. And like, I'm selling people's houses. Like, there was someone that came back to me just after Christmas, from 22 years ago when I sold their house, and now they're only moving now. But like I said, it's 22 years ago. I said, oh, geez, Ray, you're only new at the time, but geez, you're brilliant and whatever. And came back to me, like, you know, and it was brilliant, you know. But that's the whole thing. And that's the, some people want to get from zero to 100 straight away like that. You can't. Okay. And if you do, unfortunately, then you've earned the money too quickly and you haven't learned anything along the way. So the way we have learned it is it's always about repeat business. There's too many people in my industry, you know, the cartoon character, the Tasmanian devil, you know what I mean? Like, so, and they're spinning around. They're getting from A to B, but the destruction that they're making when they get from this side of the transaction to the final part of the transaction. And this is the problem with a lot of people, is that they're just, as we call, you know, all they want is their commission. All they want is their money. They're not thinking about service. They're not thinking about repeat custom. Like, if I go out and sell your house, Pork, I want your brother's house. I want your parents' house. I want the fella that you work with. I want the fella you're playing football with. I want, you have to be my cheerleader for me when I'm not in the room, you know? And with estate agents, we're Marmite. You either love us or you hate us. There's no, he's all right. It's either he's brilliant or he's a beep. You know what I mean? So like I said, there's either one. So, and that is the secret. It doesn't matter what you're doing, is you have to just give a service to people and have the long-term view that they'll come back to you. Because then if I'm selling 100 houses this year, and then next year, all of a sudden, Pork and Lisa are sending in their friends to me, and I sell another 100 houses, but all of a sudden, I have another 20 referrals in. All of a sudden, I'm selling 220. And then following year, then I'm selling 400. And that's how I built my business. And now, I'd say this year, we're going to sell over 1,000 properties.
In 2005, obviously, there was probably busy for a year or two, but then the crash came. Ray, how did you deal with that? And maybe just going to dig into that quickly. Because anyone starting a business that time, you know, couldn't foresee what was coming.
No. And again, this is what I'm saying. Like, what I'm after just saying there is I got from 0 to 100 in probably those 18 months. I set up my business and all of a sudden I was earning, you know, I was probably going to be earning probably close to $500,000, you know, in turnover that year from a standing start, like, you know. And it wasn't hard. Because back then it was so easy, and there was houses everywhere. People were turning over houses. People are moving into houses and moving back out of them 18 months later, or 2 years later, because they could buy a bigger house, you know, and the banks were giving them more money. So it was brilliant for it to be an estate agent. But then what happened, obviously, the first thing that happened was there was an election, and the election back then were in May. But in September, Michael McDougall opened his big mouth and said, if we get into government, we're going to abolish stamp duty. And back then, first-time buyers, stamp duty was anything over 1,9500. You had to pay stamp duty on. And a lot of people that were buying second-time properties, you were paying 25 to 45,000 on stamp duty. You know, compared to what it is now, 1%. But it was, you were paying on average 25, 35,000 extra on stamp duty. So you can imagine there that all the properties that we had sale agreed at that stage, that we're paying 25, 35, and they'd said, hold on now, geez, if we wait a little bit here, we might, you know, we might save 30 grand or we might whatever. And then the budgets were in December then. So from September to December, I sold around 3 houses. And compared to, I probably had 30 or 40 sale agreed, you know. And then Lehman Brothers after Christmas then all of a sudden collapsed. And then, yeah, it was really, really tough, because what was happening then was banks all of a sudden reined in straight away. Anyone there that was sale agreed, all of a sudden they took the loan approval off them. People were losing jobs everywhere. It was just, companies were closing down. Companies that have been 100 years in Ireland closed down. You know, there was people, unfortunately, geez, committing suicide everywhere. It was terrible. Like, now people don't realize, people forget how bad it was back then for those 2 or 3 years. And it was really, I went from saying I was going to turn over $500,000 to probably dropping 80%, you know. So I was probably down to around 100 grand 120 grand.
Did you pivot then, Ray, into the lettings around that time, or did you, or was you in lettings?
Yeah, to be honest, this is what I'm saying about the laziness of us back then. We didn't do lettings because do you want to be really dealing with a tenant and pain in the backside, and what's the point of dealing with it? Sure, I can go off and just sell a house here now and make $5,000 commission. You know what I mean? Like, so where you go off and do a letting and sure, I'm only getting 1,000 quid or whatever, you know, because rental values were half of what they were now. People forget that as well. In the Celtic Tiger crash now, if you had a two-bed apartment in Dublin now, it was around 900, 975 max. If you had a three-bed, four-bed house in Rafarnham, you'd be struggling to get 1,400 for 1,450, you know? So that's what the rents were back then. And, like, you're thinking, how can people afford to pay €1,000? Wow, like, you know? But we didn't bother doing it because we were thinking, I can't be bothered dealing with it. And then no one was really renting because everyone could afford to buy. So, like, we had people on social welfare that were buying houses because you'd go in and get 100% mortgage, and you'd go in back then and just say they were on 14 grand a year on social welfare, but they'd say, well, you're going to buy this four-bed house, but you're going to rent out the other three rooms, aren't you? And he was like, no, you know, you're going to rent out the other three rooms, and you're going to get 40, or you're going to get a grand a month, so that's another 36 grand a year, and all of a sudden you're on 50 grand. Sure, we'll give you a mortgage to buy a property for 400 or 450 grand. And that's how easy it was back then. So there wasn't that many tenants. So what it was a lot of the refugees, the African refugees that were coming into the country at that time. So they were the only people renting a house. And there was a lot of hassle with them when we were renting and stuff like that and whatever. Anyway, long story short, we didn't do it. And then what happened was we weren't selling houses. Like on average, it was taking around two and a half years to sell a house. And we could have had that house on a $500,000. And by the time we sold it for maybe 250, 280. Because every time you were ringing the vendor, we said, will you drop 50,000? There's no one ringing up about it because there's no one there to buy. Like there was so many houses for sale because everyone was either defaulting, they lost their jobs, they were trying to emigrate. Everything happened. And even the rental market, like people forget the rental market. Like the rental market went from when we did go into rentals eventually, we would have to, Lisa would come in and say, oh, I'm looking to rent a three-bed house. And we would have 10 three-bed houses in the area she was looking for. So we would drive Lisa around to five or six of those to have a look at it. And Lisa might turn around and say, not really interested. Or actually, I'll take that one there. That was what was. But we had to go into the rental market because it was cash flow. And then we soon realized that if we do more and more lettings here, that it's cash flow coming in. And then we started going into property management then as well, because again, getting your cash flow coming in every single month there. Whereas in a sale, it could take you, if you put the house up for sale now and selling it, you know, it could take you anywhere from 6 months to 2.5 years to get your commission for it.
Yeah. So out of that real negative period, Ray, this probably was a big turning point for you in your business. Because what you described at the very start was that you had one cash flow and strategy, which was very market dependent. But then as that came, might have been a massive negative, but I perceive it's been a huge positive of that.
I'd agree with you there, because I had to learn how to manage my business and I had to learn how to grow my business. And then I started learning about multiple streams of income then as well, because I had over reliant on, oh sure, sales are brilliant and I have all the money coming in from sales. But then all of a sudden, once the tap stopped on that, I was screwed. So obviously I had to keep doing sales, but I turned into a letting agent. Like I would have said 95, like 1 year, right? 2000 and I think it was 2011, I sold 13 properties, you know? So 13 properties, like absolutely ridiculous, like, you know? And a lot of those properties could have been on the market with me since 2009, you know? So you're not making any money on them at that stage, because like there was one property that I had to do, I think it was a 82 or 86 viewings on over 2 years, you know? So never mind all the hours then you put into it in the office and whatever else as well. So you weren't making money on sales. So we overnight turned into a lettings agent, and it was very difficult because again, there was no social media, there was no whatever, so you didn't have money to advertise. So anyone that was advertising properties, you were cold calling them, you were trying to get that business on that way, and that's how we built it. And again, we were hungrier. It got to the stage, other people, you'd ring them at 9:30, and two other agents had rang them. So then you'd have to come in at 9 o'clock, and then people were coming in at 9 o'clock and ringing them, so we'd have to come in at 8:30 to ring them, you know? So this is what I'm saying to you about outworking people, like, you know? And then, like I said, you know, we were doing lettings. We went big time into bank valuations and receiver and other stuff there as well. So that was an income coming in, obviously more so on the commercial side, sales and lettings there as well. We were getting mortgage referrals in as well, so we were getting some money for that there as well, but that wasn't really great. So it was all small stuff, but the lettings was like, realistically, for 2 or 3 years, we were a lettings agent. And that's how we built up the Ray Cook Lettings brand, I suppose, like, you know.
The Solid Foundations Property Podcast is brought to you in association with Gap Property Investments, helping you getting a better return on your money in 2026 through property. Check out gappropertyinvestments.com. And also CitySTAYS, Ireland's leading provider of customized accommodation solutions, specifically designed for contractor teams working on projects. Check out citystays.ie.
And I suppose then with the lettings, as opposed to the sales more so, it meant then that you had to all of a sudden get your systems in place. You had to get more people in place. You had to be way more organized, because with lettings, from what I can imagine, there's more volume, there's more handhold, it's more of a handholding business. Whereas with the selling business, that's more like of a, you know, there's not as many of them, there's not as much volume. So therefore you're based, you know, you're more reliant on the sales agents, you know, can they do their job? So do you place a lot of importance on your systems? Did you find it hard to kind of recruit people and get the right people in place? Or is that instrument that's coming?
For those years, we kind of had to keep it tight. Up until probably 2008, 2009. And then, like, again, this is what I'm thinking about forward. Like, I knew we'd come out with a recession. And in 2008, I saw an opening in Talla. And, like, there was 200 or 300 agents after closing down in Talla. So I saw an opening. So if I can go open and open a cheap office in Talla and put maybe one or two people into it, we can take over Talla and Dublin 24. And then at the time as well, because I was making around 70 grand a year in referrals for referring mortgage business. Because again, I was out working everyone. In that company I was referring business, I was the number one in the whole of Ireland for referring mortgage business to them. And I was making around 70 grand in relation to referral fees off them. And I was kind of thinking, well, if I have my own financial services business here, you know, maybe I can bring in a quarter of a million or half a million, you know, and that was my thinking. I said, well, look, over time, maybe I can go into life insurance and pensions and whatever else as well. So this is the way I was kind of thinking. So again, in relation to structures and staff. So we kind of kept it really tight. So we had, Ross came into me around 2008, and he's there with me since day one. But he was a sales agent. He was a lettings agent. He was doing property management. He was doing a bit of marketing. He was doing commercial. So it wasn't like it is now where you're just in sales, you sell, you're doing lettings, property management. Back then you kind of had to do everything. So I wouldn't say it was a structure. It was basically, we were just trying to keep the door open. And honestly, that was what it was like for 4 or 5 years. Just let's keep the door open here. And like, there was a lot of months there that went by that, you know, back then it was writing checks to your suppliers. And some of the bastards didn't cash the checks, you know? And then all of a sudden, you know, you forget there that whoever didn't cash it, and then you pay the wages, and then all of a sudden that would go out. And I'd have to go without them for a month or 2 or 3 weeks to pay myself, like, you know? So it was like, again, there were really brutal times, but the structures that we didn't put in place didn't really, really kick off until, again, around 2014 or 15, where we started getting a lot busier and the volume took off. And that's where all of a sudden we started putting structures in place, and we did our own CRM system. Back then, I'm not being smart, it was Excels and it was bloody Word documents, and when you look back, it was just crazy. I used to have actually a red book that I used to do my bookkeeping in on my accounts. It's a big red book, like, you know. And again, there was so little money coming in, I was able to write the whole month on one page. And then after a while, it was 2 pages. And then the whole month was 6 pages, because the property management was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The lettings was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So eventually, like I said, I had to get a bookkeeper in and stuff, like, because I was coming in after doing viewings at 8 or 9 o'clock at night. And then I have to start doing bookkeeping until 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning, just trying to have a VAT return coming up or a P30 or whatever. So it was, I'd love to tell you, I had structures. I didn't. It was when I look back, it was an absolute mess. But it was just, that was the way it was, you know.
You had to do it. So today, then, in today's time, Right. Being a, let's bring it back to today, like being a landlord today, being an investor today. I read a recent article that said like the new tenancy bill that's coming out there now is actually giving shared ownership of property to the tenants. And I suppose that the whole kind of regulation that's been brought in over the last kind of couple of years, and there's going to be new regulation being brought in there next month, is getting more and more in favour of the tenants. What is that doing to the rental market? What does it mean for investors? And do you what do you see coming up in the future? Say, do you think it's a viable place is for property investors to continue to invest in property in Ireland?
Okay, so first of all, I think it has been really poorly advertised. I think it's been really, there hasn't been enough information. I think there's been a lot of fear. We've had a huge amount of landlords that have left the market now and will never come back because, first of all, they're just annoyed with, first of all, the last 10 years with all the regulation change. Every time there's been a change, it's been on the side of the tenant. It's always never been on the side of the landlord. The landlord has always been this big, evil person. Or we're all vulture funds, you know, and that's the way the media have built us up. The new rules aren't as bad as people think, okay? So first of all, the new rules only apply to new tenancies from the 1st of March onwards. So anyone that's in a tenancy at the moment that rolled past the 1st of March, or let's just say it's whatever, 2027, that doesn't matter because that's an old tenancy. So you can still get your tenant out. You can still sell the property if you want, or you can get them out if your daughter or whoever, or you want them to move out for whatever the old reasons are. It's only if that tenant moves out after the 1st of March and then you re-rent that property that you're under the new rules. I'm not worried about the new rules because everyone keeps going about a six-year tenancy. We already had, it used to be called the Part 4 tenancy. It's now called the Part 6 tenancy. So that is still there. The only difference now is you have to sell it with a tenant in situ. But like everything, guys, there's a lot of grey areas here. And if we want to get a tenant out, we'll be able to get a tenant out because there's a lot of grey areas here in relation to it. So I'm not worried about it there at all. It will come down to if you're renting a property and you are, let's just say you're in your 60s and you're thinking, I want to sell this now when I hit 65. It will mean there that you're not going to rent to a family. It does mean you're not going to rent to someone who's on HAP because they're the tenants that will stay longer. Because if they're a family, they're probably putting their kids into the local school and everything like that. So again, there will be management in that with your letting agent that you have to turn around and say, right, I want to sell this in 2 or 3 years' time. I don't want to get caught with this tenant. So that's where we have to go off and put in certain other tenants in there that won't maybe stay as long. And there'll be a bit of management in it. But again, there's ways around it all. I don't mean to sound whatever, that's dodgy, but I think the main concern with people is there that they won't be able to get the tenant out, or they won't be able to sell the property, or they have to sell it with the tenant in situ. And that is an issue. If you do go to sell it and you have to sell it with the tenant in situ, that means you only have one buyer, which is another investor. Whereas if that property is vacant, you can sell it to an investor, first-time buyer, trader-upper, whatever, a company, whatever. You know what I mean? You can sell it to the open market. So you will get more money with vacant possession than you will with a tenant in situ. But
you won't get any money with a tenant in situ, right? Because the only person who's going to buy, as you said, is an investor. And any investor in their right mind won't buy a property with a tenant in situ because you don't know what kind of liability you're buying into. And my problem with it is that who's meant to be regulating all of this, which is the RTB, I've got my own RTB case going on at the moment, and it's definitely not fit for purpose, you know. So there is no buyer. So then that means then that your asset is valued at more or less nothing. You're just going to be sitting on it. So I know there are ways to kind of, you know, and we do pick our tenants like that. We don't go for the families just because that's not the industry that we're in. But for the majority of the people who want to be landlords, this is not their full-time job. So a family actually is the most suitable for them. It's the least amount of work and the least amount of hassle as such when they're in there, hopefully. But it comes down to them, if their circumstances change and they want to sell their asset, they more or less they can't, because there is no buyer out there. Let's call the spade a spade.
But to be honest, right, like a lot of the people that are buying off me, and they'd come into us and they're using our company. We have a company called Eldrin, it's a buyer's agent company, and they'd be going out and sourcing the properties. But what we're talking to them about is, like, you, there's no point you buying property and you're going to try to flip it in 3 or 4 years' time. There's no point you buying property and there's a downturn and then you sell it straight away. You have to buy property for long term to make your money on it. Okay, so this isn't something, a commodity you can just buy and sell and buy and sell and flip it and whatever else. Like, if you want to make your money in property, you have to hang on to it and you have to rent for long term. And that's as simple as that. The only time that this kicks in, the new rules kick in, is people that are going to be coming into retirement, or let's just say it's an inheritance and 4 or 5 family members own it or something like that, and they want to sell it or something like that. But, like, again, it's all about tenant selection. You pick the right tenant. Like, families are brilliant tenants. Like you just said there, they, like, personally, I have families in a lot of my properties because they're going to stay long. They're going to stay long. They're going to look after the property. They're going to be good neighbors as well, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas, and you go off and sometimes put in professional people, or you put in something else like that, they're having parties and a few other things, like, you know. So the main thing is tenant selection. And once you get the right tenant selection, like I said, and you time it, like I said, we people come back to us and say, look, I'm 55 now. I want to get out of this maybe when I'm 65 or 70. I say, well, we'll worry about it when you're 60. You know, come back to us in 5 or 10 years' time and we'll talk about it. There's no point talking about it. There's no point planning for 10 or 15 years' time, because at that stage, you could have another 5 sets of tenants in your house at that stage, the way it's set up. So these new rules, I don't think are going to have a huge impact. Also as well, guys, huge amount. Again, we're talking about gray areas and whatever. A lot of our landlords and a lot of landlords in the industry, any tenants that have moved out over the last 5, 6 months, they've only signed short-term tenancies with those to bring it up past the 1st of March. So what's going to happen is there's going to be a lot of properties coming on the market as well from the 1st of March onwards as well. So rents aren't going to explode like all the opposition parties in government are shouting and screaming at as well, because there's going to be a lot of stock on the market from the 1st of March and going into quarter two there as well. Like, where else are you going to get the rents? Like, you know, rents are going to keep going up and up and up and up. We're only building 35,000 units a year, you know, and that's in Ireland. That's not just in Dublin. So we're only building.
Can I challenge that, right?
Yeah, well.
Right, so can I challenge that, right, about the rents going up? So I believe that, yes, the rents have gone up, but I think that there's a narrow cap, because what's happened is yes, the rents have gone up because of the lack of supply, but people's wages haven't gone up to the same tune. So it's all well and good saying, oh, rents are going to keep on going up into the sky or whatever. But that, I don't believe that that's true, because I think that what's going to happen in March is there's going to be a glut of properties come on the market. I do think that landlords are going to up their rent. And I think, like, some of them rightly so. Some of them have been stuck on stupid rents that, you know, just don't make sense. And the regulations meant that they couldn't increase them. So I think there's going to be a lot of properties come back on the market. It's going to be, some are going to be fairly priced, but there's going to be a lot that's going to be ridiculously priced high. And because they're an opportunistic or whatever. And they think that it's just going to keep on going up and up. But when incomes don't go up, so the average wage of a standard person in Ireland, I think, is around, like, is it 40, 50 grand, something like that? Like, they just physically can't afford it. And when the percentage of somebody's salary goes over the 35 or 40% that goes on rental income, it becomes unsustainable. So I think that there is a cap as to where rents can actually go until everybody's wages start to increase. And I think that what's going to happen is the opportunistic landlords who are going to go in at stupidly high rents, they're going to, it's all going to be well and good. They're going to get it for the first kind of couple of months. Then the tenant, especially when there's talk of a recession coming, when the jobs then can't support the rent, they're going to start defaulting. And the problem is that when they start defaulting, you can't get them out because of the RTB, and that is not fit for purpose, the length of time it's taken. So I think that there's a very short-term thinking about this new rules coming out in terms of landlords. Let's get them in, let's get high prices. But the long-term view is that I don't think tenants can afford these high rents. And then I don't think the RTB is fit for purpose to get them out and get a set of tenants in that can afford it. I think that there's a big risk there. And I know property is for the long term, but when you can't control your asset, i.e. you tried the high rents, people couldn't afford it, let's get them out, let's get new ones in. I think that's where the stumbling block is in Ireland.
Yeah, and I think as well that there will be a ceiling, but we're not at that ceiling yet, Lisa. And you have to look as well, and I've said this before about Brexit. We never spoke about the benefit of Brexit in Ireland because COVID happened at the same time. And a huge amount of professional companies came over. Obviously, wages jumped up because, again, we are a highly educated workforce. And yes, rents are absolutely stupidly high, but if you look at London, Paris, Copenhagen, you know, all those cities, those rents are absolutely mental money. And because there's a shortage of properties, rents will just continue to grow, to go up. And also, a lot of the landlords that are leaving the market, they're not selling apartments. Some of them are, obviously. The vast majority of them are selling houses, properties. So 3 and 4 bedroom houses, because they're long-term landlords, or they're landlords in the market for a long time. And like you just touched on it, they might have been only getting 11 or 1200 euros where they should have been maybe getting 3 grand. And they've left the market because they're just frustrated with it, or they're coming up to retirement age or whatever. And now all of a sudden, there's no houses on the market. There's very few houses. So it's going to come down to a supply issue here. And that is going to have a huge effect on that. So if you're a family renting and you need to get a house, you're going to have to pay huge money for it. Now, I don't want to see rents. If a rent is at 2 grand, I don't see rent going to 3 grand. Or if the rent is at 3 grand, going to 4 grand. That doesn't benefit anyone. You know what I mean? People say, oh, sure, let an agent. I want to see an increase in property prices by maybe 1 or 2% every year. I don't see 10 or 15%, because if it goes up, it's going to probably have to come down, you know? And with the rental market, like, people keep always put the sales and rental market together. They're two different markets completely. Like, the sales market at the moment, you could have the same argument in relation to the price inflation there. Like, wages haven't gone up at all compared to what property prices have gone up, you know? So if you look at, I won't even go back to 2015 because property prices are really low. If you even look at 2000 in COVID times and where they are at now, they're probably, I would easily say, they've probably gone up 30%, 35% in that five and a half years. Like, definitely. Yeah. Because it's meant, and I can guarantee you, salaries have not gone up 35%. You know?
And that's my reason. Say an average house in Dublin now is three and a half grand. That, to somebody, an average worker in Dublin, that's their net income. So really, one person, if they're a couple, one person's whole net wage maybe is more or less going on just rent. And it's keeping them then trapped in that cycle then as well. So I think
what they're doing, Lisa, sorry to jump in, but what they're doing now, we see this a lot now, you might have a family of four, so a couple and two kids renting a three-bed house now. But what they're doing now is they have her brother living in the box room, and he's paying whatever amount of money as well. And we do see a lot of that going in. Or maybe the brother and the girlfriend are living in the other room and the kids are in the box room on bunk beds or something like that. And that is happening a lot there as well. We also then as well have, for those landlords that are trying to really, really gouge the market, those landlords are nearly turning their bed or their sitting rooms and their dining rooms into bedrooms downstairs. So instead of having a three-bed house, they're renting out as a five-bed as well. So then they're getting multiple rents. So people turn out to look at the five-bed house. Sure, there's five of us going in there. We'll pay whatever, 700 quid each. It's a cheap house for them if they're getting a bedroom for 700 quid on average, you know, and they're paying the 3.5 grand. I don't agree with that, because your wear and tear on the property will go downhill. So instead of going off and maybe charging the market rent of 2.8 or 2.9, we only had a landlord this week, and we've had this argument with him. And he's like, oh, well, I just bought the house and I overpaid for it, and I had to go off and spend 25 grand then putting money into it and furnishing it. And then he's trying to have this. And we're having this argument, say, the only people that will rent this now are, you'll have 5 or 6 or 7 people living in this 3-bedroom house. and they're the only ones that can afford this rent. So what you're saying, Lisa, is I do agree with it, but honestly, I think by the end of 2026, I can see rents going up by another 10%.
I say people won't want to hear that. Okay, but I think so, definitely, with the new rules.
It's a huge debate, and it's great to have an expert like yourself, Ray, discuss these different factors that are in the Irish property market. And from investors, as you've indicated, the door's not closed. Keep coming to Ireland to invest and suppose to get that clarity. And as I say, suppose it's something that there has been a huge amount of scaremongering, Lisa, and suppose we see it, we hear it. People are just not interested in Ireland. We've seen the investment percentages over the last number of years. They've massively decreased, and suppose that's to the detriment of the narrative that's been painted about the Irish market. And
sorry, Pádraig, you're just a little bit glitchy. There's a bit of a feedback on your line. But yeah, we definitely like loads, Ray. Thanks a million for coming on board and chatting to us about your journey and about the property market in Ireland. And no, it's been great having you on board. Thanks a million.
Thanks for having me, guys.
The Solid Foundations Property Podcast is brought to you in association with Gap Property Investments, helping you getting a better return on your money in 2026 through property. Check out gappropertyinvestments.com. And also CitiesDays, Ireland's leading provider of customized accommodation solutions, specifically designed for contractor teams working on projects. Check out CitiesDays.ie.